This podcast is for informational purposes only and does not constitute legal, tax, investment, financial, or other advice. It is not intended to cause or induce breach of an existing agency agreement.
Hello?
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 This is the Vancouver
Commercial
Real Estate Podcast.
And welcome back to the Vancouver Commercial Real Estate Podcast. I'm Corey Wright.
And I'm Melissa Moretti.
And Melissa, today we have an outstanding guest on the show, Eric Adernack. For those who don't know, industrial lands planning expert, has some great stuff he puts out. We talk about it later in the episode where you can go find and sign up to get everything he puts out there, but extremely knowledgeable person. Looking at things for also from a bird's eye view, we get a great insight of what's happening in the industrial side of things. We get great insight on, we talk about a little bit about politics. We talk about tariffs. We cover it all today.
It was a great conversation.
I haven't seen you for a few weeks. Yeah. I was gone last weekend.
Where were you?
I was in Miami.
Oh,
over spring break.
On the beach?
No. Yeah, kind of. I was on a cruise and then we found ourselves on the beach after. For those who haven't been to Miami, the wealth.
Oh.
In Miami is insane. Like pink Ferraris, purple Ferraris, yachts bigger than the houses they're parked in front of. It's absolutely crazy
the wealth you
see in Miami. So for anyone who's been there, definitely go. It's expensive.
Really?
I haven't been.
I picture myself just going down the strip and they're just being like salsa dancing.
It's everything. I got a Perrier at the hotel. And maybe it's because the hotel, everything's got a 20% gratuity in it.
Okay.
It was like $8 or something like that for a Perrier water. And like, what do you say no after? I've already drank it before I paid for it. So it was great. It was good. We haven't seen each other since for a few weeks now.
That's right.
I'm curious to find out, how are things on your side? Obviously, there's all this uncertainty going on in the world. Are people still buying and selling houses right now?
Yeah, they are. They really are. Definitely end users are making moves throughout the market. I think that's usually the case at any point, no matter if, you know, our interest rates are up or, you know, whatever the equation is, people are moving through the market. Transactions are still happening. Good properties that hit the market at appropriate prices sell quickly.
Really? Interesting. Oh, yeah. So interest rates where they're at and kind of probably continuing to come down, that's obviously kind of driving it.
I think that's definitely helping. I think buyers, because they've got a lot of choices, I think they're in a good position.
Yeah. Is it a buyer's market?
It depends on the segment.
Yeah.
The market. Like overall, it's more balanced.
Is there one type of property, whether it be houses, townhouses, or condos, that's selling better than others?
Yeah, I would say kind of like the mid, like attached, but not necessarily a condo.
Gotcha.
If you look at the statistics, it's like
things are moving.
The ratios for like a townhouse.
Yeah.
But it also depends on the area, right? Like that's kind of overall broadly. But if you look at, you know, something in Maple Ridge versus something in Vancouver, things are quite different. So overall, I mean, I still think things are strong and, you know, prices haven't done a huge drop or anything. And
you're busy because you're just...
I'm busy.
Because you're just good at what you do.
Well, you know.
Even in a bad market,
you're busy. I don't
want
to say that on this
show. Oh, I'll say it for you.
Our team is generally quite busy.
Good.
I mean, we have great clients that we work with that keep us busy and we're lucky, right?
Amazing. Well, without further ado, let's get to our interview today with Eric Adernack, industrial lands planning expert. Enjoy, guys. Great episode. This podcast is presented by Impact Commercial.
Impact Commercial. John, Alan, the team over there are fantastic. They've all been on the show.
They have, yeah.
Friends of the show.
Great guys.
Wealth of experience. They can help with all your commercial financing needs.
Whether it's owner-occupiers, land development funds, commercial investments, or multifamily, these guys got you covered.
And they recently obtained their CMHC correspondent lender status.
So for all your commercial lending needs, visit them at impactcommercial.ca.
That's impactcommercial.ca.
This podcast is sponsored by Atlin at Clayton Crest, a master plan community in the West Clayton area built by Zentera Developments.
Zentera is an absolute force, Adam. They've been nominated for Multifamily Builder of the Year for 10 consecutive years and just won again at the Georgies for 2025 Multifamily Home Builder of the Year.
What's really exciting about Atlin is the West Clayton location. You're within walking distance to the future SkyTrain station, giving you that perfect balance of city access while living in a peaceful, family-friendly community in the Fraser Valley.
And if you have kids or are planning to start a family, there's an on-site daycare where residents get first access. This kind of thoughtful planning is why Zentera's projects stand out in the market.
The amenities at Atlin are incredible too, Matt. A rooftop patio with stunning views, fitness center, co-working space, and lounge areas for events. The outdoor space is extensive with two fitness areas, three children's play areas, and multiple spots to relax.
With major investments happening in the SkyTrain and the 72nd Avenue extension, West Clayton is set for explosive growth. This is genuinely one of those opportunities to invest in a community before values skyrocket.
And that's really the key here. This isn't just about finding a beautiful place to live. It's about making a smart investment in your future as the whole area continues to develop.
Pre-sales for Atlin will begin soon. Register today at atlincondos.ca. That's atlincondos.ca.
All right, we're here today with Eric Adernack, industrial lands planning expert. Eric, how are you doing today?
Terrific. Thank you very much, Corey, for the opportunity to talk about industrial matters.
Well, you know, there's lots to talk about, but before we get into that, Eric, can you tell us maybe a little bit more about yourself, how you got to where you are, and also what you do on a day-to-day?
Sure thing. Well, I've got some 20 plus years of planning experience, land use planning in the Metro Vancouver region, other parts of British Columbia, and I have a planning degree as well as a business degree. So I find the intersection between land use and economic employment, as well as transportation, taxes, and everything else very much interesting. I've worked in Metro Vancouver leading the industrial lands portfolio. I've worked for developer as well as municipality and consultants in different capacities in different jurisdictions. And I find putting this all together is very much what I like to do. And it's certainly a relevant topic, industrial lands, given the amount of jobs and economic employment activity associated with it. However, it doesn't get all that much attention. If you crack open the newspaper or anything else like that, there's probably a lot of information about, and concern, rightly so, about housing and prices and supply. But for everybody who is living in the region or moving to the region, they also need a job and a job space, which we need to attend to.
Well, like I said, you've got our attention. And obviously, like I said, we've been subscribing to your emails and all that stuff for quite some time. And we'll give you a chance today to kind of really promote that, because I'd highly encourage people, if they're not already receiving your stuff, definitely make sure they sign up to do it, because it's great insight with that. Industrial land and lands, period, have gone on a major run over the past better part of a decade here, it feels like. What is your take on kind of what's happening right now? We've come out of the COVID era. We had really high interest rates. We've had higher construction costs. The market has slowed down, and we'll get into kind of like the macro of what's happening right now. But what's your overall take on what's happened over the past couple of years?
Well, if you go back 10 years, that's definitely a while. And I think you're quite right. There's been very much a rapid growth in rents during a period there, which has slowed down and reversed over the last year or two. And that's in response to a scarce amount of land and also other types of things in terms of the reality that it's more expensive to construct projects, especially more intensive types of ones or density ones in urban locations. And thus, the rent needs to be higher. And in a limited amount of space and land in a region, it's quite common sense, or economics, land economics 101, that land prices and thus rents are going to go up. In terms of the longer haul, I think the fundamentals are still valid. We have a constrained region, Metro Vancouver, Lower Mainland, in terms of a limited amount of land in total, and particularly for industrial lands and spaces. We have a growing population. We have a growing economy, I hope. And we have other drivers of that. And geographically, you just have to look at the mountains or the ocean or the agricultural land reserve or the border to say we're in a fixed area. So one would expect prices to go up. In terms of more thoughts on that, though, I would have to say there's a limit for your average tenant in terms of what price they're going to pay. And at some point, we may approach that or be approaching that in terms of just simply can't afford an ever-increasing rent rate, which was the case for up until a couple of years ago. And they're led with a certain choice at that time. You have clients who I'm sure are thinking about this. Well, do I renew a lease at a much higher rate? Do I not expand my facility and make the best of my current space because I don't want to pay more rent? So I maybe add some more racking or somehow use the space more efficiently. Do I say, well, you know, this is too expensive and I don't really need to be here. Maybe I'll go to Abbotsford or all the way to Alberta. Or for some businesses that are owner-occupied and they're approaching retirement, they might say, well, it's been a good run and now's the time to perhaps close it down. So all those things are real results of this. And I'd like to say there's more, if there's more options for businesses to have homes and accommodation at cost-effective spaces, but also the right places in terms of transportation and amenities and infrastructure, then we're not at the risk of losing economic activity here.
Well, one thing too, you touched base on there that rings true to me is the lack of supply that there's traditionally been and stuff like that. You're looking at this from a bird's eye view, obviously. Is there any markets or regions that you've sort of seen more constraint over the years that could maybe potentially be concerning in the bigger picture, just with the lack of land? Maybe thinking of something like Nanaimo on the island. It's an island first and foremost, but the lack of land that they have, is there markets there that you can think of that are potentially going to go down those roads in the coming years or decades?
Well, it depends on how you look at it or what term you're using. I know there's a recent Vancouver Island supply chain study looking at demand for industrial and logistics-related uses on Vancouver Island. They profile the demand as they see it for more of that space. Although they reference the Vancouver Island, I think most of the action is really closer to the port terminals, the ferry, the population, and that being Nanaimo, which although they call it mid-island, if you look at a map, it geographically isn't. Also, some markets in reality simply have more opportunity or land available to be added to the inventory or the industrial universe as there is demand for it. So there's a supply response to the demand if there is a lot of land available. In a constrained market, where that simply is not a response possibility, you're going to see people going with the alternative options in terms of either intensifying, redeveloping, or going elsewhere. And I'm certainly aware of some Vancouver-based developers going to other markets in Vancouver Island or Okanagan, et cetera, and seeing if they can build and satisfy a market there that hasn't been served very well by, let's say, higher spec or modern flex space and other types of industrial units.
Now, what is your thoughts right now? Obviously, it feels like over the past, we'll say 2 years, and that maybe going a little too far. I mean, interest rates have gone up dramatically. Construction costs have gone up dramatically over the past 5 years. Acquisition costs of land have gone up dramatically. Thus, we've got now product, and I'm thinking maybe more of the owner-occupier model right now, where people are having to deal with the reality that industrial space that used to probably be, you know, $200, $300 a foot, potentially might be $500, $600, $700 a foot now. And that market really feels like it's slowed down dramatically. What are your thoughts on everything that's going around, maybe primarily in the Lower Mainland right now, with regards to the excess supply?
Yeah, you just certainly, Corey, you just listed all the concerns or challenges and realities of it, right? We're talking about a situation where prices and costs are certainly a challenge for all sectors of industrial as well as other commercial residential developers. And is the price at the level high enough to achieve a viable development at this point in time? And your perception as well as mine and talking to people in the know is probably not. There are a lot of industrial projects that are on the hold. Sales have not been what they were hoping for in terms of lease rates or sales volumes. And the end result is those projects may not proceed as quickly or as urgently or at all in this current term. And certainly a reality of it as well is that with the uncertainty about trade and macroeconomic matters, it's not so much even the price is too high. It's just there's no decisions or people are risk adverse and not wanting to make any type of investment commitments at this time.
Now, do you see that as the economy kind of, hopefully stabilizes and we'll get into kind of where we're at right now, that absorption of that product getting better and better, even maybe at those prices, is just more of like a hesitation factor right now due to the maybe not so much lack of demand for the product?
It's a bit hard to answer that one. I think we'll have to see, and I can only answer it after the fact. You'd have to think of it from an individual operator. They may not be particularly wanting to pay a top dollar or higher price. But if that's the reality and their business is expanding in terms of growth, they're profitable, they can afford to pay higher rent, or they can get ready financing for a loan or mortgage to buy a property or strata, they'd proceed. Other ones that are perhaps marginal businesses or aren't really on, at the growth curve, they're going to stay where they are and be a little bit more defensive about it. What does that mean for a developer who's thinking about bringing some lands to market? Well, as always, they'd have to see what not just the conditions are today, but what the future ones and how they can meet that demand. I've got to say, in the current environment, with many big news announcements in the last week or days in terms of trade, economic, tariffs, political, and taxes, it would be difficult to know the exact market conditions in the future when a project is ultimately launched.
The talk right now is tariffs. And tariffs obviously have had dramatic impact on the US, Canada, the whole world now. Obviously, Mr. Trump had come out earlier this week with tariffs on every country that tariffs America at 50% of what they tariff America at. Obviously, in Canada, our GDP is very, very dependent on export to the States. What are you seeing or hearing? Because obviously, this is going to filter back and impact maybe more the industrial side of the commercial real estate market, maybe more so than some of the other ones, just because a lot of manufacturing and stuff like that that's done up here that would eventually end up in the States could be at risk. What are you hearing? What are you seeing? What are your thoughts on all of this stuff?
Certainly, I think Canada is a big country and we have different economic parts. If you look at the concerns about manufacturing and certainly auto-oriented parts and products, I mean, that's very much an Ontario and Quebec concern, more specifically in terms of the north-south connection there with the auto sector in the States. British Columbia has a more diversified economy in terms of proportionally a smaller percentage of our trade is with the States as compared to Asia. Also, we don't have the same manufacturing sector as comparable in other locations, although there is still manufacturing and assembly and other value-added activities. I don't want to dissuade that. They're just smaller or not getting the same profile. If we are to diversify our economy from the United States, which is a south-north connection, and through trucks and rail, and we're trying to go with the Asia market in terms of expanding that, I would foresee, if that ultimately materializes, increased trade through the port. And we have, in fact, two ports, Port of Vancouver and Port of Prince Rupert, that might have growth opportunities if we're talking about shipping products. I also, of course, note, without being able to explain it all right here, there's import activity and there's outport export activity, and they're very different types of activities and trends and matters and drivers and facility needs and everything else. So both of those values or variables may be changing, but the exact impacts require more study.
Right now, obviously, from our federal government level, we have an upcoming election here that's been called early. And we currently have Mark Carney sitting in, the leading the country right now. Conservatives obviously are out there. Obviously, I would think you're following the federal election, obviously how it ties back to our industry. What are your thoughts on the overall situation out there right now and the political outcome? Well, you definitely don't have to share your political views by any chance, but how do you think the political outcome maybe affects the tariff situation moving forward?
To try to give a positive view at this, I would say maybe a crisis is creating some response here. There is well-known a lot of trade barriers within Canada between provinces since practically the 1867 Constitution. Those are long overdue for a overhaul and reduction, I would say, if not entire elimination, both of goods as well as services, but particularly even of labor force and professional accreditations and other things like that. So there could be more business and employment mobility between provinces would be a positive. In response to the tariff threats and actual threats that are happening, concerns, we've seen renewed interest and concern and prioritization of natural resource projects or energy-related projects and approvals thereof, including in the province and elsewhere. Those may be positive responses. We're now getting much more attention and profile to economic development matters that during better economic times didn't get the attention they required. I would foresee benefits in terms of our approval process for large projects, as well as small, being quicker. That would allow for more nimble investments, more responsive actions, etc., for some of the natural resource sectors, whether it's liquid natural gas or forestry or mining. There's a huge amount of opportunity in British Columbia for those sectors, and we should allow them to proceed as appropriate, considering the opportunities there. And again, I'd like to see in British Columbia, things that are focused on our region. I know, of course, we're part of a larger country and there's a lot of attention to trade and economic matters in Central Canada, but we're an important part of the country and there's about 15% of the population, and the Canada's largest port is also located here.
If you had to look into your crystal ball, how do we, what does the next 6 months to a year look like with the current tariff situation? Do we have resolution potentially in the foreseeable future? Do countries just to say, forget it, we're going to tariff back and call it a day? Look into that crystal ball, Eric, and what does the next 6 months to a year look like, you think?
Well, if I had an accurate crystal ball, I would have taken all my money out of the stock market about a month ago. I think there's a lot of moving parts. There's the initial tariffs, there's the responses, and then there's the responses to the responses. And as we've seen, that has had huge impacts on the stock market recently. Manufacturing, auto, and other ones are in the news for putting projects or investments or horses on hold because they can't get parts back and forth. And then I would point out there's even bigger concerns here, not just about those sectors that are immediately tariffed and challenged. It will create a knockoff effects in many ways. There's going to be fewer people employed. There's going to be less economic activity in general. There'll be a depression or recession or something of that nature. And what do you see in those kinds of environments? Well, sure, land prices and rents might be going down, but in response to that bad news. So it's not as if affordability is improved because of that scenario. The entire system is depressed. So it's really hard to see a lot of good news in the future here. I would like to think that some of these tariffs are temporary or reversed, although it's hard to know if that's the program or not. And the last point, I know there's a lot of talk about diversifying Canada's economy to non-US markets, but the reality is we are right next door to the world's largest economy and have been there for 150 years. And geographically, politically, transportation-wise, it is no small effort to realign our economy with either Asia or Europe, for example.
Moving forward, obviously, we have a lot of uncertainty right now in the world. How does Canada rebound? Do we look internally, like you'd mentioned there, about maybe some internal or interprovincial trade barriers coming off? Do we look internally? Or do we find new trading partners?
I think we don't have to say one or the other. We can expand our trade with the UK or European Union, certainly with some Asian countries as well, and perhaps some markets that we haven't been as active with in terms of Latin America or other parts of Asia. Again, all easier said than done and require partners in those jurisdictions. I think the internal looking aspect would be, how do we increase our productivity? It's been well known over the last few years that the GDP of the economy has increased considerably. However, the population increased a lot as well. So the per capita GDP is actually flat or down, and almost all measures of productivity are not that satisfying. So what can we do to increase productivity for workers, be it industrial or other sectors? There's automation, there's training, there's equipment, there's software. In some cases, there's removing regulations or other procedures or processes that consume business time but aren't necessarily productive or efficient from their perspective. So I would think, again, just like the opportunity to reduce trade barriers within provinces, some reviews of that nature could be done so that no matter what the future is in the United States, 6 months from now or 4 years from now, Canada is in a stronger position.
I'd be interested to get your take. You're obviously following a lot of markets here on the industrial side of things. Is there one market or markets that you're excited about, or you think there's a really good opportunity in future years as you're seeing a market grow or expand?
It's hard to know for sure. From some of my inquiries and research about it to date, one thing that was flagged to me was actually food processing is a potential opportunity. So we do make, of course, a lot of food in Canada, and including on Vancouver Island and elsewhere, and Okanagan, be it fruit or produce or dairy or seafood, etc. And much of that is consumed within the country, but also some of it's traded to the south, to Canada, from Canada to the United States. If there's barriers or tariffs there, are there opportunities to do something different? For example, one person told me they seafood and shellfish and those types of products are made and harvested in you know, Vancouver Island area, and then usually taken straight to the States, and they're still served fresh. If they're in fact going to be exported those types of products, then there may be more food processing required to either can those products or freeze them for a longer transportation route. Also, in terms of food, the buy local trend is certainly had a huge uptick lately. Are people going to be looking to local food processors for that opportunity? To some degree, I'm sure. And then lastly, in terms of other types of buy local aspects, are there opportunities to consume more Canadian products? I know there's been a long discussion about trying to have value added for wood products or even have prefabricated housing within the Metro Vancouver or Lower Mainland region to be a consumer of BC wood. There's opportunity there, but I just can't say that those are easy and quick.
Eric, do you have any sort of final thoughts on just everything that's happening out there? I know there's so much to unpack, and this conversation could go on for hours. You're really busy, and we appreciate you taking the time you have with us today. Is there anything else out there? Any other topics that we want to get out there? Any other further thoughts on everything that's happening? I know there's a lot going on.
Certainly. I think this is a very much important topic. I've written a lot of articles about it and get as much attention as possible to industrial matters. I know I've talked to some people who just are not familiar with the topic, or they shrug and say, well, I don't have a job on industrial lands, or I don't care what the port's doing, or I don't like rail, or I don't understand why there's so many trucks going down Knight Street or something like that. That's fair enough point, but you have to say, well, where do you buy your products? Where do you get your groceries from? Where do you go shopping? Where do you get your car service? Where does a contractor who's fixing your house, where are they coming from? What are some other activities that are sort of beyond your immediate visual line of sight, but are still part of the wider economy and ecosystem? And I think it's really important to profile that and bring it to attention and not just have a sort of a view that industry is negative. And certainly, as I've written about as well, there's a lot of different types of industrial uses or spectrum that you could use, from heavy to light or modern to historic or urban to suburban, et cetera. And some of those typologies really are not, you know, noisy, polluting, industrial revolution kind of ideas. They're clean, modern, low impact, provide good jobs, and can be located in a relatively urban setting if there is land and transportation infrastructure supporting it. And these jobs pay considerably more than the average industrial jobs, and they're accessible. In a Metro Vancouver study done late last year, some 22%, if not more, of jobs within the region are on industrial lands, and even more related to industrial land activities. So a huge part of that, and they pay quite a bit more in terms of taxes than other sectors, all contributing to a complete economy, if one wants to use that term.
Amazing. Eric, well, we thank you so much for taking the time today to kind of unpack a little bit what's going out there. I know it's a very hot topic right now with everything that's going on. Before we let you go, we have a six-pack of lighthearted questions. You have a few more minutes, you can stick around for us.
All right. Hopefully they are easy.
They'll be as easy as we can make them, we promise.
All right, first question. What's your favorite vacation spot?
I don't like taking vacations.
Oh no. We've never had that one before.
No, that's okay. Well, it's okay. Well, you know, BC is a beautiful spot to be. So anywhere that's you are right. In BC is always good.
That's right.
Next question up, Eric. Unfortunately, you found yourself on death row. You've done something horribly wrong, but you're given one last meal before it's all said and done. What is that last meal?
I haven't thought about that question just yet. Creme brulee.
Creme brulee, oh, ooh. Going out on top. Good choice.
I'm lactose intolerant.
Oh. All right, next question. What's your favorite band or musician?
Well, it's been a while since I bought a new CD, probably sometime in the 1990s. So I don't have a current answer.
Nope, that's okay. That's okay. You're at a bar, it's late, you maybe had a couple drinks, someone gives you a karaoke mic. What song are you singing?
I don't think you would describe my singing as singing. It would probably be yelling and embarrassing, and I'd have to have had a few drinks and then some to want to torture the audience with my abilities. I have more of a voice for podcast than lip syncing.
Good answer. Good answer.
All right. Last question. What's one book you recommend our listeners read?
One book? Well, there's more than some. I'm just looking at my collection here to see. I'm right in the process of reading Mark Carney's book about values or value, which is a start. And I suggest also that people be relatively widely read in terms of not just reading stuff and publications from people who they know and like, but understanding various different matters beyond that. I do enjoy reading economic textbooks and history textbooks, which may not be for every crowd, but I find that kind of experience or understanding of things in the wider perspective is very much helpful to understand where we are today.
Well, Eric, thank you so much for taking the time to come here and unpack kind of what's going on. How can our listeners find out more about what you're doing, all the great stuff that you publish? Where can they go find that stuff?
Sure thing. Well, thank you very much. I do have a website, industriallands.ca, with all types of industrial publications, resources, materials, links, including a couple dozen articles I've written over the last 3-4 years about industrial lands, trends, uses, definitions, and related matters such as parking and employment and live work and everything else. So definitely look me up there and you can connect to me as well as see my abilities and expertise. Secondly, I also have a newsletter, which you could find on that link where I send out all the top planning, development related news, excitement, etc., as a organized digest once a week. So you can subscribe for that. And then lastly, beyond my day job, I also teach planning courses. So I have a website called learnplanning.ca, where at various different institutions, I offer planning courses ranging from long academic ones to short one-day courses. And one of them specifically is planning for non-planners, which may be of interest for your audience.
Amazing, Eric. Well, thank you so much once again for taking the time. We appreciate you joining us and we look forward to talking to you in the near future.
Thanks, Eric.
Thank you very much. Take care.
There you have it, folks. Our interview with Eric Adernack, industrial lands planning expert, extremely knowledgeable. And like we talk about on the program there, encourage people to go to his website, sign up for his weekly email. Lots of good insight coming out every single week.
Yeah.
Great insight.
If you want to know more about industrial lands, he's the guy.
Yeah. Extremely knowledgeable guy. You know, his take on tariffs and how they're affecting everything. We're obviously in a very unprecedented time right now. And I feel like I've been saying that for 3 years, it feels like. We've got tariff. We had Liberation Day this past week, is what Mr. Trump called it. World Tariff Day is pretty much what it was. I'm really curious to see how people react or how countries react. If countries are kind of like, hey, let's sit down and let's talk about our tariffs between countries. Or if they say, forget it. Here's more tariffs for you.
It'll be interesting to see.
I don't know. I think in this country here, I think until we get our election behind us and we know who the prime minister-elect is going to be, whether Mr. Carney's staying in or Mr. Polyev is coming in, we'll know exactly what direction we're going. That's when I think we'll have better idea whether we can sit down with Mr. Trump and his team and figure out how to deal with this or if this is just the new world of business. And one thing that Eric talked about in the program that a lot of people may not know is there's a lot of interprovincial trade barriers. So even removing those, allowing trade to happen more freely across our country, that's going to make up for some deficit we might find if we aren't shipping as much to the States. I'm not saying it's going to plug the hole, but I'm saying it could backfill a little bit or some of it to help out with stuff like that. So it'll be really interesting how next few months play itself out. Obviously, it's a very challenging time right now. It feels like depending on what day it is, depending on what country gets a tariff, onto what items, but it's going to be very, very interesting moving forward.
Well, at least. Hopefully there's some good that comes out of it all.
Well, you know, at the end of the day, maybe all the world tariffs go away and the global economy just booms and Mr. Trump's the smartest guy in the room.
Look at that.
You never know. For all those people who do want to sell their condos, townhouses, and houses, regardless to the tariff war going on, Melissa, how can people get a hold of you?
Yeah, you can call me 778-869-4477 or email me at melissa@vancouverrealestatepodcast.com.
And anyone looking to do commercial real estate can reach out to our Vancouver office, 604-428-5255. You can send me an email, corey@williamwright.ca, or you can go to our website and sign up for the latest and greatest news at williamwright.ca. Lots happening out there. Things are busier than people would probably suspect. Obviously, there's sort of some hesitation right now with what's going on, but things are still moving. Mm-hmm. Good products moving, good products leasing. Always going to be a good market in the BC commercial real estate market because we don't have any supply to speak of.
Yeah.
Can't build anything.
That's it.
All right, guys. Thanks so much for joining. We'll see you guys next week with another great episode.
Have a good week.
Take care.
Subscribe today.